are listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today on the WGXC Morning Show, we've got brand new local music from Catskill's Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers, and from Kingston bass player Michael Bizio, his latest collaboration with pianist Matthew Shipp. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which begins when Jason Martin from Troy finishes his song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that 78-year-old Donnell Gallagher, one of East Durham's strongest Irish voices, passed away at his home in East Durham on December 10th after a long illness. Gallagher was one of the founders and past president of the Michael J. Quill Irish Cultural and Sports Center in East Durham. He also founded Guaranteed Irish, America's largest Irish import store, 42 years ago in East Durham, and he was married to Kitty Kelly, a famous local Irish singer. Kelly wrote on social media on December 11th, and I quote, "You taught me so much in these 20-plus years, and I will do my best to live the way you lived, but I'm not sure how to do it without your lead, your advice, your wit, your constant support and love for me over these 20-plus years, plus your calm and gentle, loving presence. I am forever grateful God put us together, and I am grateful we danced while we were able," end quote. There was an outpouring of affection for Gallagher on social media. Gavin's County Inn described Gallagher's passing as, and I quote, "a big loss to East Durham, Irish Catskills community, and Gallagher's family," end quote. The Shamrock House posted, and I quote, "a man with so much vision, passion, dedication, and always helping others. Donnell, your memory will live on in the Shamrock House and in all who were lucky enough to know you," end quote. Funeral services have not yet been announced for Gallagher. And you can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
The Siena College Research Institute is reporting its recent poll signaled that voters believe Governor Kathy Hochul failed to make progress on six of the goals she laid out for 2022, including making communities safer, enhancing trust in state government, transforming SUNY into the envy of the nation, and making the state a place where people want to live, not leave. Crime and the cost of living are the top of respondents' priority list for state officials to address in 2023. Hochul's favorability rating and job approval rating have both declined slightly since October, but remain in positive territory. While 2022 Republican gubernatorial candidate Representative Lee Zeldin's favorability rating has increased, CNN Siena College pollster Stephen Greenberg said voters believe that Hochul will make progress on her efforts to increase the availability of quality medical care and creating conditions for business to succeed. But on the four other goals, voters said there was no progress. Quote, Hochul's job approval and favorability ratings are above water barely, although they edged down slightly since before Election Day, and her 43% unfavorable rating is a new high, unquote, Greenberg said. Read more about this at scri.siena.edu.
The Greene County Department of Health reported another death from COVID-19 on December 12th. Officials did not give out any details about the death, only noting it was the 146th death in Greene County since the pandemic began. On December 8th, the county reported another death, two for the month. Seven Greene County residents died from COVID-19 in November.
Patricia Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that the chairperson of the Dutchess County Legislature defended an amendment to the 2023 county budget to draw $25 million from the fund balance to cover upgrades at Dutchess Stadium was the most fiscally prudent way to meet the county's contractual obligations to the minor league ball club that calls the Dutch home. Democrats, however, denounced the amendment, which was introduced on the night lawmakers were set to adopt the 2023 spending plan. The GOP-led legislature last week approved the amendment in a 17-6 vote. Democrat Randy Johnson of Poughkeepsie voted with Republicans to use the fund balance to pay for repairs and renovations at the stadium. Comptroller Robin Lois joined with Democratic legislators, calling the amendment a, quote, outrageous grab of taxpayer dollars, unquote, noting that the Republicans avoided the established process for funding so large a project. Lois said the amendment vote gave the administration, quote, a blank check, unquote, to spend the money on whatever they want at the stadium. Quote, they don't even have to do what they've been talking about for the past 4 years, unquote, Lois said in an interview on Monday, December 12th. Quote, they could do totally different thing. It's a blank check to the administration and the Department of Public Works to spend it on the stadium however they want with no legislative oversight and no public comment, unquote, she said. Legislator Chair Greg Pulver said the county has a contractual obligation to the Hudson Valley Renegades to make specific improvements to the stadium. Quote, Major League Baseball makes all of their minor league parks adhere to a certain standard, unquote, said Pulver. Quote, if we don't do these things, Major League Baseball can and will pull the franchise, unquote. Pulver denied that funding the project was a last-minute effort without any opportunity for legislative or public comment. Quote, it has gone through the committee process twice, unquote, Pulver said. Quote, we've discussed this for 2 solid years, unquote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Mid-Hudson News reports that the first major local snowfall of the year took a life in Greene County. A 50-year-old man was killed early December 12th while plowing snow at the Essendant Distribution Center on Route 9W in Coxsackie. According to the Greene County Sheriff's Office, Lamont Jackson of Catskills Plow collided with a stationary box trailer and caught fire. Jackson was pronounced dead at the scene. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
Harrison Grubb reports for News10.com that a small number of people, including representatives from a local union, gathered in Schenectady on December 13th in a rally against the recent rail agreement that averted a national strike. The protesters were standing in solidarity with workers who do not support the deal. Quote, it's the ultimate expression of having someone's back, unquote, said Greg Giorgio, delegate of the Upstate New York chapter of the Industrial Workers of the World. President Joe Biden signed a bill implementing the labor agreement that included a 24% raise over 5 years, but did not expand paid sick leave for the union's workers. Quote, I think there's a pretty strong agreement among a majority of rail workers that the contract that the Congress and the president imposed on them is really very unfair, unquote, Giorgio said. The president urged Congress to pass the agreement, fearing the economic impact of a shutdown on the rails would have across the country. For the Schenectady protesters, it was unfair for the government to intervene in that way. Quote, workers have objective rights. If you trample on those rights, you're endangering the public from a safety viewpoint, and you're going to lose the trained people in your workforce, unquote, said Martin Manley. Local rail workers supporters hope to see negotiations reopened in the future to address expanded sick time and other concerns. The rally in Schenectady was one of several held nationwide in support of members of Railroad Workers United. Read the full story at news10.com.
The Village of Coxsackie reports on social media that the Coxsackie Transfer Station reopened on December 13th. The station at 88 Plank Road had been closed since July 12th for construction. The station is open Tuesday through Saturday from 7:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and is accepting all garbage and recycling.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, it will be sunny with a high near 34 degrees. It will be partly cloudy on Wednesday night with a temperature low of around 19 degrees. And on Thursday, a chance of snow after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 35 degrees. And more snow before 1 a.m. on Thursday night, and then rain and snow with a temperature low of around 30 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Wednesday, December 14th, tune in. I think what's the first holiday show this December on the radio from a local programmer. Maria Manhattan's Hudson Cafe features the holidays with a twist at 11 a.m. on the radio at WGXC. That's followed by the Bezazzled Radio Hour at noon from Spike Priggen. At 4 p.m., tune in the WGXC Afternoon Show live from Acre with the WGXC Congressional Report and other news goings-on in the area. At 7 p.m., we're live from Brooklyn with the Off the Hook Show, simulcast from WBAI in New York City, and all about technology from the 2600 Hacker Crew. Then at 8 p.m., we're also live from New York City, this time live from Experimental Intermediate. We air another one of their live performances. This one is from Lee Gilboa, who is from Israel but is based in Providence, Rhode Island. He'll be performing from 8 until a little after 9. And at 10 o'clock, it's time for a new show on WGXC, Nighttime with Christopher Michael Hefner, live from Acre on 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
There is a holiday menorah lighting on Sunday, December 18th at 5 p.m. in the public square in Hudson on Warren Street. Rabbi Kremer will preside on the first night of Hanukkah, and all are invited as the first candle is lit on the menorah lighting at 5 p.m. Sunday, December 18th in the public square at 7th Street and Warren Street in Hudson. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
The Public News Service Star Newscast, December the 14th, 2022. I'm Mike Clifford. On the 10-year anniversary of the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, a local organization continues its work to see a national assault weapons ban.
Newtown Action Alliance, founded briefly after the Sandy Hook shooting, has been active in getting Connecticut's assault weapons ban passed. The group has also spoken with congressional officials about a national ban. David Stowe, with the alliance, describes where the U.S. is with assault weapons in the 10 years since the shooting. In his words, it's insane that people can be armed with weapons made for war.
Where we are now, I would say, I think we wake up every day and more Americans are horrified by, one, about the fact that people can own those weapons, and two, that we actually have not done anything to stop them. There were some small little pieces in the Safer Communities Act that passed this summer.
In the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, background checks were expanded for people under 21, and federal firearms restrictions were extended to include people convicted of domestic violence misdemeanors against dating partners. Stowe feels that, in the current lame duck Congress, a ban would not make it through the filibuster process, but he thinks there should at least be a vote to demonstrate where individual lawmakers stand on an assault weapons ban. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And on Tuesday, union members and lawmakers rallied on Capitol Hill to pressure Congress to support workers by better funding the agency set up to protect them.
The National Labor Relations Board has been flat funded since 2014, and with inflation, the agency says that amounts to a 25% budget decrease. Sarah Steffens, Secretary Treasurer for the Communications Workers of America, says as a result, the agency is woefully understaffed.
So many of these corporations have a history of fighting tooth and nail, violating workers' rights, firing workers, refusing to bargain, and if there is nobody to hold them accountable, there will be no one to stop that kind of behavior.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
The CWA says the number of requests to start a union increased 53% this year, and the number of unfair practices complaints were up almost 20%. Now for the New York Times, President Biden signed the Respect for Marriage Act into law Tuesday, mandating federal recognition for same-sex marriages and capping his own personal evolution over the course of a four-decade political career. In an elaborate signing ceremony on the South Lawn, complete with musical performances by Cyndi Lauper and Sam Smith, Mr. Biden told thousands of supporters and lawmakers that the new law represents a rare moment of bipartisanship. This is PNS. Folks in Utah are calling on Congress to expand the child tax credit and say it should be a priority in a year-end tax package.
This comes as lobbyists are also pressuring elected officials to approve business tax breaks as the year draws to an end. According to the Coalition on Human Needs, nearly half of Utah adults with children said they found it difficult to pay household bills in the month of October. And one in three said they didn't purchase basic needs so they could pay their energy bills. Clint Cotton with Community Action Partnership of Utah says they know the tax credit was a big help to Utah families in 2021 and want to see it continue.
If their people are stable, if parents know that they can make it, I believe they're going to show up to work more productive.
In Utah, 151,000 children under the age of 17 were not granted the $2,000 per child tax credit because their parent didn't earn enough. Cotton says they'd like to see some of the restrictions in the law reduced or eliminated so families have access to all of the funds available. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
Now to Wisconsin, where they're ranked 21st in the country when measuring health data, but an annual ranking says the Badger State is behind most other states in funding public health efforts.
America's health rankings from United Health Foundation show Wisconsin is 49th among states in getting funds to local health departments. KT Gallagher, who leads the Dunn County Health Department, says administrators like her must often scrape together whatever they can to provide services like immunization, support for new families, and environmental health programming. She says many people face barriers to maintaining a healthy lifestyle, and these offices can make things better.
That systems level work, if we had additional funding to support that, would go a long way to prevent illness that can adversely impact our ability to be safe and healthy and productive.
I'm Mike Moen reporting.
Finally, to Kentucky, where Natty Romagon lets us know the majority of families there say they'll be gathering as usual for the holidays.
More than 8 in 10 Kentuckians responded it is not too likely or not likely at all, but COVID-19 would keep them from the festivities. Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky CEO Ben Chandler explains choosing to get vaccinated against both COVID and the flu can help protect loved ones. He adds the new survey results show that most Kentuckians see getting vaccinated as a personal choice.
Nearly three quarters of vaccinated Kentuckians were either very likely or somewhat likely to receive a COVID-19 booster shot if it's recommended to be taken annually, similar to the flu shot.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Here are some interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, December 14th. Local early morning temperatures range from 16 degrees in Tannersville to 27 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 37. Snow falls today, likely 300 miles away in Pennsylvania. Around here, it's going to be mostly clear skies and a high of 25 at 1 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop just a little bit, hitting 20 degrees. Then, tomorrow, we see temperatures steadily and slowly rise all day, hitting 27 degrees just before dark. Snow returns to the area around 3 p.m. and will drop about a foot overnight. Temperatures reach 30 degrees by dawn and stay right there as snow falls all day Friday, dropping another half foot to a foot. A couple more inches fall overnight as it tapers off by dawn on Saturday, which will have a high of 28. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:12 a.m. Looking way up, we see Geminid fireballs are being detected as we near peak, and a freshly released plasma stream is due to arrive on Sunday. Solar wind speed is currently 341 kilometers per second at 6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, with fair conditions below 60 megahertz overnight. And that includes good conditions below 8 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 159. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jess Puglisi of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Al Criazzo. Catskill Mountain Housing is looking to help income-qualified homeowners in Greene County. We have funding available from the state of New York to pay for your needed repairs, like a new roof or a furnace replacement. Whatever you need to keep your house a safe, secure, and affordable environment for your family, call me at area code 518-943-6700 or drop by our office at 448 Main Street in Catskill.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay.
host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Here's 2022 new music from the Dust Bowl Fairies from Greene County. The song's called Lost in Time.
Tick tock, tick tock. And so the time has come. The clockmaker ship is setting sail at sunrise. You can make it if you run. Hours come and gone. No one likes a sleepy head. Out in the cornfield, sleeping and dreaming. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Your future is leaving soon. Hear the bells ringing.
Happier than they've been, or they will. after all.
You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acre Catskills. Today, East Durham.
Unsilent Night is an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December. He's been holding them at various cities around the world since 1992. Special composition for boombox radios, where multiple speakers make one shimmering seasonal composition. This year, one of the locations for Unsilent Night is in Kingston, New York. That's on December 16th from 6 to 7 p.m. Go to unsilentnight.com for more information about the specific location that will be announced shortly. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information about all sorts of local events. from Kingston, and that was Michael Bizio on bass with New York City's Matthew Shipp on piano with the title track from their 2022 album Flow of Everything.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. It's not yet January, and the 2023 election and voting bills are already piling up in Texas like tumbleweeds. Many of these bills are designed to prevent voter fraud, which already is as rare in Texas as the jackalope. NBC News and the Texas Tribune report that 62 bills have been pre-filed in the legislature, many designed to increase oversight of elections and step up penalties for voting illegally. The Houston Chronicle estimates that Texas election officials spent 22,000 hours looking for voter fraud after the 2020 election, resulting in only 16 voters with fraudulent addresses on registration forms. HB 39 is one of five Republican-sponsored bills which increases voting-related crimes from a misdemeanor to a felony. SB 220 is one of two bills which creates election marshals, similar to Florida's new state police division investigating election fraud. Florida's force made its first arrests in August, only to have most of the charges dismissed due to the state's own mistakes. While states like Nevada and Alaska recently took steps to use a single-ballot open primary system, HB 239 would close Texas primaries, requiring separate ballots for each party. With a Republican House, Senate, and governor, these restrictions could pass later next year. See articles outlining the proposed Texas voting bills at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Today's a good day. A day America takes a vital step toward equality.
Thousands of people gathered on the South Lawn of the White House Tuesday to watch President Joe Biden sign the Respect for Marriage Act, which mandates federal recognition for same-sex and interracial marriages. The event was the culmination of a decades-long fight for marriage equality and was achieved with strong bipartisan support. Meanwhile, the House Appropriations Committee has introduced legislation to fund the federal government until at least December 23rd.
With the many challenges facing our nation and the world, including devastating natural disasters and the high cost of living, we cannot wait any longer to pass this bill.
Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut says the short-term measure will allow federal agencies to continue operating. While lawmakers are close to a final agreement, she says they need more time. Inflation in the U.S. slowed again last month for the fifth straight monthly decline, though grocery prices increased 0.5% from October to November. Representative Maxine Waters of California says housing has become the primary driver of inflation.
There's no metropolitan area in the country where families can afford a home making minimum wage.
U.S. rental prices have hit record highs, up more than 12% from a year ago. Meanwhile, the country's biggest apartment companies saw their profit margins increase nearly $300 billion in the past year. The House committee investigating the January 6th attack will hold its final event on Monday, when committee chairman Benny Thompson of Mississippi says it will publicly release its list of criminal referrals.
The select committee has developed a massive body of evidence, thanks to the many hundreds of witnesses who have voluntarily provided information relevant to our investigation.
The committee's final report is expected before the end of the year, as Republicans are expected to dissolve the committee when they take control of the House in the next Congress. Meanwhile, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia says her recent remarks about the January 6th attack on the Capitol were sarcasm.
They say that whole thing was planned, and I'm like, are you kidding me? A bunch of conservative Second Amendment supporters went in the Capitol without guns, and they think that we organized that? I don't think so.
Green told attendees of a New York Young Republicans event she and former aide to President Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, would have won and they would have been armed. The White House condemned the remarks, calling them a slap in the face to law enforcement. Finally, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis leads former President Trump in a new USA Today Suffolk University poll. 56% of Republican and Republican-leaning voters prefer DeSantis, while only 33% would support Trump. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next on WGXC, here is 2022 local music from Catskill's Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers. The song is called I Believe in You.
I believe in you. You believe.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Julie Farrar from the New York Caring Majority is joining me, Blaze Bryant, here on Hudson Mohawk Magazine to talk about the Fair Pay for Home Care campaign. Hey, Julie, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Blaze. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So you have been working behind the scenes with the New York Caring Majority on the Fair Pay for Home Care campaign. What have you all been up to?
Well, most recently, we are having our relaunch campaign for the 2023 legislative session. And we just recently had a relaunch event here in the Capital Region. And we were able to get together with some folks that had been involved last session and do some canvassing and reach out to other folks, because what you realize if you do some work around home care is that almost everyone are not them in that many degrees of separation away from either providing or needing home care. The vast majority of Americans want to age in place and stay in our own homes. I am a disabled New Yorker. I am aging with a disability. And due to the Consumer Directed Program and family caregivers, I am able to stay independent in my own home. Most recently, we reached out to folks in apartment buildings, aging and disabled apartment buildings to talk to them about the relaunch effort and get people involved and excited again. Although we had such an unprecedented amount of money put towards home care workers in New York State, it was not nearly enough. It is not livable wages. And also we have had some quite a few difficulties with the way that the money has not been given to the home care agencies and fiscal intermediaries to be able to pay out raises for home care workers. So even though they received a $2 an hour wage increase, many home care workers in New York actually saw that their insurance, their health insurance premiums went way up, or their coverage went way down, or vacation pay is no longer available, or overtime is no longer available, or their hours are being cut to afford this $2 an hour wage, which does not lift people out of poverty. So our goal this right. session is to fight for livable wages. It's fair pay for home care workers. So Caring Majority is touring the state of New York and meeting with home care workers, meeting with family caregivers, meeting with people who receive care to make sure that we are ready to hold Governor Hochul accountable and demand livable wages for home care workers.
Julie Farrar with me, Blaze Bryant here on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. So the livable wage, it's looking like this, $22.50, correct? And also have the home care worker wage tied to inflation?
Absolutely. It just makes sense. It's 150% of minimum wage, and that is not uniform throughout the state. But it is $22.50 an hour. This is enough to lift people out of poverty. This is enough so that home care workers can have their own form of reliable transportation. They can afford to pay rent. They can afford to pay their mortgage. They can put a roof over their own heads. They can feed their own families. That is what we need. We need the infrastructure to provide livable wages so that home care is a field that people want to go into, and also for family caregivers who may have to give up their own careers in order to care for, say, an adult disabled child or for aging parents, that they are not forced into poverty as well.
For sure. Now, as a disabled New Yorker, you do have supports, but both of us know, just from doing this sort of work in the field, not everyone has the necessary long-term services and supports to succeed. If you didn't have these supports, such as the Consumer Directed Personal Assistance Program that you talked about, where essentially you get to be in control of who takes care of your needs, what would life look like for you?
Well, I actually had kind of a good indicator of that. Unfortunately, over the past few years with COVID, during COVID, I developed a hospital acquired infection, and I actually live with chronic life-threatening illness. And during COVID, every 6 to 8 weeks, I was ill with sepsis and had to go into the hospital, which was very traumatic. Also, it was very dangerous because I have a compromised immune system, and I was going into the hospital simply because I had to have a 10-day regimen of IV antibiotics. And I know that from the bills that I received, that was about $125,000 just for the hospitalization portion of the services that I received in the hospital. I was able to qualify for consumer-directed home care. I was able to qualify for long-term care services in the home because I was no longer able to work. I became impoverished, which again is a big problem that we have. You shouldn't have to become impoverished in order to receive home care. But my daughter thinks because of family caregivers, and at the time she was an unpaid family caregiver, I was able to have IV antibiotics administered at home. And it was a much safer environment for me. It cost a lot less to the taxpayers. And that is what I would be doing, would be, I would be living in with a lot of anxiety and living in fear, because I was going every 6 to 8 weeks to the emergency room, sitting there sometimes for a couple of days, and then being admitted to the hospital for 10 days. So I'm actually saving the taxpayers money right now, and I'm in a much safer situation. And I have family caregivers who have been trained to provide IV antibiotics so that I can stay home and stay healthy.
So you're saving the taxpayers money.
And I am staying home. Yes.
Right. How does everyone not win? And why is this not a reality for everyone?
Well, I like to refer to it as the commodification of disability. And there are other groups that are stronger lobbying groups, and they tend to represent facility-based care. There is sometimes this kind of perverse, there's a perverse incentive right now, to be very honest, to fill those 15,000 nursing home beds that were left empty by when COVID just ran through like wildfire and killed tens of thousands of New Yorkers in institutions because there is no ability to do infection control there. And so it's criminal that people don't have the ability to choose where they receive their long-term care, and that we don't have the infrastructure that we need to enable all New Yorkers to age in place.
In the final minute that we have left here, how can people get involved in the Fair Pay for Home Care fight?
I would say to look up New York Caring Majority and find out what we're doing. We're on Facebook, and you can look up New York Caring Majority .org and find out what we're doing and get involved. We're really encouraging people who receive home care or who provide home care to tell their personal stories so that the legislators understand that there are real people and real stories and real constituents behind the need to support home care and to provide livable wages for home care workers.
Julie Farrar from the New York Caring Majority. I'm sure we will be having many more conversations about fair pay as we go along here. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes of your time.
Thank you for your time, Blaze.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Wednesday, December 14th. We start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Citgo in South Caro has gas for $3.49 a gallon, according to the Gas Buddy website. Then we look at the air quality forecast, which is a 22, almost identical to Tuesday. The UV index is just a 1 on Wednesday, and the water temperature in the Hudson River at Albany is 48 degrees. That's 2 degrees higher than average for the last 10 years in Albany. National Weather Service in Albany predicts Wednesday should be sunny with a high of 33 and a northwest wind 11 to 14 miles per hour with gusts as high as 24 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Wednesday night, the forecast is for partly cloudy skies with a low around 19 and a northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, there is a chance of snow, mainly after 3 p.m., with cloudy skies and a high near 33. Snow is also predicted Thursday night after 7 p.m. with a low around 31. And then Friday, there's snow forecast before 9 a.m., and then it may turn to rain as the temperatures veer up above freezing. Friday night, the rain and snow may continue and taper off then with cloudy skies and a low around 29. Saturday should be partly sunny with a high of 36 and a low around 20. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.